The guards were ordered into the site itself. They approached to within 1/2 mile and then refused to go any further. They were intimidated by what they were seeing.
I think I would be, too.
The object lifted up and went straight up in the air. The witnesses told us, some of the guards that we interviewed and were able to find. We later went to NORAD, if you will, and applied the Freedom of Information Act on NORAD, and lo and behold, we surfaced a document which talks about NORAD picking up the object at 1,000 feet and carrying it all the way until their sensors lost it to infinity. They described it as being the size of a football field and circular.
And that's now public information?
Yes, that's in the book.
And yet there are people who say, well, if the government believed in UFOs, they would tell us. In their own way, the government is telling us, aren't they?
Yes, in a way they are.
It's almost as if they would like to have this albatross lifted from around their neck that they put around it about 30, 40 years ago.
Yes, we've heard stories that, you know, the documents that we've obtained were really meant to be released, if you will. You just had to get the right combination, that the government really wants to tell the story, but they don't know how to get out of this dilemma that they're in for 20 years of saying there was no such animal, and that people that report these things are either crazy nuts or profiteers.
Well, it'd be easy to say that there were some misguided generals along the way, and perhaps security officials, and blame them. They're all retired now anyway, and start afresh and go on.
Well, the problem is, when you have very good cases like this, they're able to keep the secrecy intact by having the individuals involved sign secrecy documents in accordance with UNEP 146, which carries some severe penalties if the observer or viewer of the object, military personnel, tells of these incidents. They're subject to some heavy fines and some time in jail.
Or worse.
Or worse, right. There are even incidences we found where people were made to sign lifetime secrecy oaths. These were the cases where people were involved in retrieval of crash UFOs.
And astronauts to the moon.
That's right.
And things like that. Well, let's go back to our callers and see what's on their mind tonight. And anytime any of these come to your mind, Larry, feel free just to interrupt and tell us about them. I know there's so many fascinating things in your book. We have Merle on the line. Hello, Merle.
Hi. Some years ago, I read about this Project Blue Book, and Major Kehoe was, I believe, headed that up. Is that correct?
No, Donald Kehoe was a retired Marine major who formed a group called the National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
Okay. What is his status now? What is he doing?
He's retired. He actually was the spearhead into the government, if you will, his organization. They kept trying to get Congress to intervene into getting a study done by Congress into the UFO phenomena. He was almost very successful at times. He then got quite old and retired out, and NICAP finally closed its doors. Where my organization, which I formed, which is Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, picked up the fight, and at that time in 66, when Congress passed the Freedom of Information Act, which enabled the public to gain access to government documents, we began filing our Freedom of Information Act request and picked up the fight where Donald Kehoe left off.
Well, we do need to have a congressional investigation of it.
Well, that's our spearhead, and that's our goal.
We almost had a United Nations investigation of it.
That's right. That was in 1978.
But the United States put the kibosh on that.
Well, it just so happened that the country that brought us into the United Nations at that time was, what is that country we just had the, we raided that island, Guyana, or whatever it was, had brought us into the United Nations. And,
Grenada,
that's it. And, we were there 3 days, and the third day that we were there in the United Nations, the country had a coup and was overthrown, and the United Nations tabled the UFO problem into what they call the Outer Space Committee, and there it lays today.
Nearly had a good investigation going. But
yes, we're not giving up, though. We're going to try to get back in into the United Nations and try to proceed on that thing and also have a congressional hearing done. I think we're going to be very successful, though.
The only one that seems to have an investigation of any kind of quality happening to it right now is the House of Lords of the British Parliament.
Yes, in England. You're right.
Okay. Does that help you, Merle?
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We have Dan on the line. Hello, Dan.
Hi there, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Hello, Larry.
Hello.
Hi, this is Dan calling. First of all, I just wanted to thank you for all the tremendous effort you've put into your work.
Well, thank you very much.
My question is, what is the most important document that you feel you have uncovered so far from the Freedom of Information Act request?
Well, I think the most explosive documents that we have, and I say documents, are two cases that we are working on now, which are in the book. There is new information that's coming to light on one almost daily now, and that is the incidences that occurred in December of 80 at RAF Bentwaters, which is a NATO base in England. To bring your listeners up, those who are not familiar with the case, is that we had a gentleman approach me here in Connecticut while I was giving a lecture on UFOs, and after the lecture he came up to me and he said to me, "Sir, did you happen to hear about a UFO landing in England and beings getting off the craft and some type of communication taking place with the military people on the base?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, let me tell you about it. I'm one of the security officers who was stationed with the 81st Tactical Fighter Wing at RAF Bentwaters, and I was present during that contact and landing." He began to tell us a fantastic story, if you will, with us first taking a skeptical eye towards it, because we've heard these type of cases come up before, and when we would investigate it, we'd find out that there was no basis of fact to it. But the man seemed very sincere to me, and he began telling me of the story, which I'll relate to you, which involved him being on a guard post late at night and with a jeep pulling up and a lieutenant and a sergeant in the jeep, and he gave me their names, by the way, being taken off his guard post and told that they were going on to a security thing, being taken down to the motor pool where they filled these gas-operated light alls, if you will, then being transported to the main gate of Bentwaters where they picked up a convoy of trucks, drove out about 5 miles towards the sister base, which is RAF Woodbridge. They then made a right turn into a forest, which is called the Rendlesham Forest. There they pulled into the forest about a half a mile, stopped the trucks at a staging area. All the weapons were taken off the security police, if you will. They were then broken down into four-man groups and fanned out and began going into the woods. Now, as they were going into the woods, the animals were just running out in droves, the deer, if you will, rabbits, everything. As they went in deeper into the woods, now this was in the morning, in the early morning hours, if you will, they began seeing lights coming through the woods. There were helicopters over above from the Woodbridge base, if you will, circling the forest. As they get in closer to the light, they came into an opening in the field. When my witness arrived there, he claimed that the field was surrounded by military people, and in the middle of the field was what he described as something looking like a transparent aspirin in the middle of the field. He could hear radio communication between the people on the ground and those in the helicopters, and he could hear one of the helicopter pilots saying, "Here it comes from the east." They looked to the east, and then they saw a red ball come over the trees, hover over this transparent, if you will, maybe mist, as he described it, hovering over the mist for a minute, and then this orange, red ball breaking into, or exploding, as he said, with no sound, into multi colors. When these colors dissipated, there was this craft on the ground. Now, he told me at that time, "Did you ever see the movie Star Wars?" And I said, "Sure, I did." And he says, "Well, that's the only way I can describe what I've seen in that field. That ship looked just like some of them craft, if you will, in Star Wars."
Hmm.
His platoon or his squad of security personnel were then ordered in very close to the craft. He got to within 5 feet of it, along with the base commander, who was Colonel Charles Holt. At that point, beings, if you will, started to float out the bottom of the craft. These were very small creatures, very large heads, 3 feet tall. At this point, some type of communication began between the base commander and the beings. Now we had a story that was unbelievable, if you will. So I began filing Freedom of Information Act requests on the 81st Tactical Fighter Wing at Bentwaters.
In England?
My requests were met with flat denials in the beginning, saying that no such incident occurred at Bentwaters, They had no records. I specifically asked for photographs due to the fact that my witness had told me that photographs were taken, that the craft left indentations on the ground, which the Air Force investigated. There were tape recordings made by the military as the incident was going on, if you will. And I requested that all in my FOIA request. Again, I was met with flat denial, so I put my researchers on it, and lo and behold, in the 3rd Air Force, we surfaced the document. The incident happened exactly as the person told us. Now, once we had that...
That was a British sighting, right?
No, that was an American sighting.
Oh, I thought that was the RAF base someplace.
Yes, well, it's called RAF Bentwaters. It's a shared base between us and the RAF. There are actually no RAF personnel on the base.
Yeah, that's why I was confused, because Freedom of Information Act would not apply to Britain. I kept on referring to RAF.
Well, that was interesting, because they tried to pull that on us, too, that the incident did not occur on United States Air Force jurisdiction. Right, that's what they tried to pull on us. And they claimed that there were no official documents, but we found that out to be a lie, because I did surface a document where it showed that the Air Force did the investigations on that case. That a craft did land, did leave marks on the ground, did leave radiation, and they did a thorough investigation on it. The only thing that was left out of the document, and you could see that the document was pieced together and there were parts missing, was the part about the alien beings being seen, if you will. Once that got into our hands, that document, that began opening a lot of doors. With me doing talk shows, we began surfacing more witnesses to the event, if you will. Since the release of the book, we have now turned 14 first-hand witnesses to that event in Bentwaters, all here in the States now. Plus, in my request, I had stated that I had asked for a tape recording that was made in the field at that night. I even placed a long-distance phone call to Bentwaters and spoke to Lieutenant Colonel Holt, who told me at first in the conversation that there was no tape recordings made. Then in the next breath he said there was, but the tape recordings were destroyed. For a person who's telling me that the tape recordings were destroyed, I now have that tape in my possession.
What did they talk about?
They talk about the object coming down and landing. They talk about the landing site itself with the indentations on the ground. You can hear the Geiger counters going off. They're very excited. They began seeing other lights, which we were unaware of, due to the fact that my witness didn't tell me that. While they were doing the investigation, objects were coming down out of the sky. In some incidences, they get almost within 250 feet of the witnesses there, the military people there. The tape is edited. You can hear it. It cuts off in spots, and it picks up in the middle of a conversation. Our understanding is that it's an excerpt, if you will, a 20-minute excerpt of a two-hour tape.
I see.
No recordings of the conversation between the base commander and the aliens?
No. We have now turned that case over to... I was in Washington, D.C., where I held a press conference in front of the Pentagon when I was doing the promotion for Clear Intent. And I had challenged all the news media that was there. It's very interesting, Bill. There was over 30 reporters and papers there at that time when I held that press conference in Washington. And I kind of challenged the news media in a sense that I said that... for years now, for the last 4 years, we've been gathering the information, and no reputable newspaper would pick up the story or do an investigative journalistic investigation on the documents. We had even went to 60 Minutes and asked them to do an investigative story on it, and they refused. I kind of challenged the newspapers to pick up the stories, and lo and behold, the cable news network did pick up the stories, and they are doing the investigation on the Bentwaters case now. And from my last contact with them, which was this morning, they are very, very successful, by the way. They're going to prove that case to be real, exactly as I told it to you.
Well, I'll leave it to cable news network to get out there and get the job done.
Well, they're going to get the scoop.
Larry, what do you think, what kind of suggestion can you give to me and other people who are very serious-minded about the subject? What frontier area of research could we all move in force that you think would help break through, you might say, the silence barrier?
Well, I think the answer is exactly what we're doing now, is to get into government and get the senators and congressmen involved, because they've been duped also. There have been a lot of hearings on UFOs, but you remember they're hearing only one side from the military and not the true side, which we found out. We even found reports where congressmen have asked for hearings with the Air Force and were lied to.
And that, of course, is contempt of Congress, I would think, in many instances. We'd like to see a full-blown congressional investigation with presidential pardon to the astronauts and others involved in NASA that would allow them to go ahead and speak up, even though they had signed the national security vow.
Yes, we wrote a letter to the President of the United States, both in Nixon's time and in Reagan's time, asking the President to release those military personnel from UNAP 146 due to the fact that the government claims that UFOs are not real. Therefore, if UFOs are not real, there is no need for UNAP 146. And to release those people so they can tell their UFO stories. And they flatly refuse to do that.
Even the Reagan administration.
That's right.
All right, just one last comment, Larry, and I'll hang up. What edge or what you might say information do you have regarding astronauts on the moon and UFOs? What perspective do you have of this whole, you might say, subject?
Well, I have talked to people who have known some of the astronauts. Off the record, they will tell you of UFO events. On the record, they will tell you they never saw UFOs. Our information has it that they have some beautiful photographs of UFOs. Even the time when we had the Apollo shots where the landings and the buggies were on the moon, that the astronauts were actually seeing UFOs hovering or landing on the craters in and around where they were. And there were codes used, by the way. You remember the phrases, yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Yes.
In one of them. Well, that was a code saying, yes, then things are real. They're here.
Yeah, that was Lovell on Apollo 8, circling from behind the moon on Christmas.
That's right. Now, the only astronaut that's actually come forward with testimony has been McDivitt. And he gave his testimony in the United Nations about his...
I thought it was Gordon Cooper.
No, Cooper talked in the United Nations about the sightings that he had in Germany prior to him becoming a astronaut.
Cooper didn't go to the moon.
No, I realize that.
McDivitt was the only one that gave testimony in the United Nations about the object following his spacecraft, which he took some photographs of it. And when he landed, the photos, of course, were taken by personnel and developed, and he later... never got to see the photos until Life magazine printed the pictures, and his claim was that what was in Life magazine was not what he took photographs of.
There are some photographs I have seen from Apollo 14. One is one of the most beautiful flying saucers you ever saw, landed. And another one is of a huge dish antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And by huge, I think it's 1.2 miles across the dish, and it isn't pointed toward the Earth.
Uh-huh.
We don't know how to make them that big.
But the problem is, like I said, off the record, if you get to know some of the astronauts, they'll tell you some marvelous stories of events that occur. On the record, they'll flatly deny it. And probably the reason for that is that they're still governed by secrecy oaths that they were made to sign at the time that they were part of the program.
And probably willingly signed them, as far
That's
as
right.
that goes.
I think the area that is just most fascinating is the NASA UFO connection. It seems to me more tight than any of the secret agencies that you've been secrecy agencies that you've been dealing with. It seems like there is a literally steel wall about getting information from them.
Well, we tried to get into NASA many a time. When I say get in, I'm by utilizing the Freedom of Information Act, because we do have informants that do work for NASA that are feeding us information also. The story is just dying to be told.
Dying is the word.
And the problem is the oaths that people are made to sign, and that's what's holding everything up.
Maybe we can break that.
Well, Larry, thank you very much, and I really support you in your future investigation.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good night, everybody.
Dan, appreciate your call. It's 10:30 in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Larry Fawcett, the author of Clear Intent, an investigator of the UFO phenomena in general, but certainly the government's enormous effort to keep you and I in the dark about it that has been going on for decades now. And we'll be back to Larry and with our callers in just a moment. ...of the UFO, and he has as much information about that as anyone in the world, I would imagine.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Donnie, it's your turn to get to us.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
First off, I've never seen a UFO myself. My mother once did, but I never have. but I still believe that there are UFOs and highly sophisticated beings who exist on other planets. I have a couple questions on the beings themselves, if that's okay.
Sure. Can you speak up, then?
Sure. One question I have is, are there different facial characteristics of these beings, or do they all look alike?
It's interesting. The smaller creatures, the 3 foot tall ones that have the very large heads and large eyes, are all reported as if they are brother and sister, if you will, almost like clones.
Uh-huh.
If you see five, they all look the same.
Uh-huh.
There are reports of humanoid types, if you will, our size, maybe a little smaller, with our characteristics, that sometimes accompany the smaller ones, if you will.
I see. Okay,
and then you have the reports of the robot types being seen, such as the Pascagoula, Mississippi case, where the two fishermen were abducted and taken aboard a craft, and they reported seeing a creature that almost looked like a robot.
Could he have been a robot then?
Speculate and say from the testimony that they were giving that it probably was some type of robot that they were seeing or were abducted by.
But the most common one that has been reported is the little guy.
Right, that's the one I was kind of referring to, the ones that are 3 to 4 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to remember something. With the being that's being reported, the small creature or the large creature, they have two arms, two legs, fingers, eyes, nose, mouth, facial features, and so forth, that these are somewhere in our evolution chain. They're Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
They're humanoid.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That was kind of another question. Are there different sexes? Are there been reports of men and women?
The only case where I actually saw a woman reported was actually in two. One which took place in Brazil where there was an abduction and the gentleman was seduced by a female. And the other case occurred in Arizona with a gentleman by the name of Travis Walton, where he did see a female.
Uh-huh. Hmm. So there are differences then,
pardon?
As far as facial characteristics, other than the ones that were perhaps clones.
Yes.
I see. Well, that's interesting because I've always wondered that. I didn't know if they all looked alike or if there were differences.
But some of them look like us, Dottie, and if they were walking around, you wouldn't notice them.
I see.
Well, Bill, if you believe rumors and stories, and I get my stories from the military, they are walking among us.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you.
Your neighbor could be a space alien. In fact, Brad Steiger put out a list of things to look for. And
you're talking about the star people.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Dottie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, I'd like to just interrupt here for a minute and tell your listening audience that I will be in L.A. on December 10th at the Masonic Temple in L.A. from 7 to 10 p.m. It's free to the public, by the way. Being that the temple will only hold 300 people, they're asking that anybody interested in attending that lecture that night call for reservations. And could I give a telephone number, Bill?
Certainly. Go right ahead and let's do it again so the folks don't miss it.
Okay. And those that want to go, it's free. Just place a call to 436-8784 and make your reservations, and I'll see you December 10th, which is a Monday night down there.
Monday night, December 10th at the Masonic Temple. What's the address?
In L.A.
The downtown one?
I believe so. Well, they can get the exact address from that telephone number that I gave.
All right, give it again.
Okay, it's 436-8784.
Okay. All right, I think we have George on the line now. George?
Hello, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I want to ask Larry, I'm very interested when he said that the main purpose of the government was ascertaining military secrets from a craft that they have in their possession. Could he tell me some backup to that conclusion that the government actually has one of these UFOs in their possession?
Yes, the information that we have, they have more than one. There's been something like 40 crashes or 50 crashes since 1947. Of course, they've been studying these that are in their possession since that time. There are indications that our government is now experimenting with a prototype UFO, if you will, which sprung out of those investigations on crash UFOs.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. UFOs apparently are somewhat shy for the simple reason that they never actually have been seen, let's say, in the middle of Times Square by, let's say, half a million people, let's say, on New Year's Eve or something like that. So
I think you missed the beginning part of the show.
I've been listening right from the beginning.
Oh, well, okay. Did you hear the story of the Brewster sightings where thousands of people saw them just this last summer?
Yes, but the point, all right, I heard that, but you say there were thousands of people, but in other words, thousands of people didn't come across and all at once say they all saw it. There was people that said there were thousands of people there. I don't know how many people said they saw it among the thousands of people.
At one town hall meeting in the village of Brewster, over 1,200 people showed up, and over 800 of them, were eyewitnesses to the event.
Well, okay, I'll go along with that.
That's a lot of people there.
Yes, you're right, but what I'm saying is this now. In other words, even if that were so, we can't really say that it was a flying saucer. It could have been a hoax. It could have been somebody flying something up there. What I'm saying is this.
No, it couldn't have been that. Nothing flies at like 25 and 30 miles an hour and stops and is that large with huge bright lights over it, over facilities, quite often nuclear plants. That was sighted by very reputable people, hundreds of them. And we can't say that it didn't happen. We have to say that it did happen.
Okay, all right.
It was.
Well, I'll go along with that, but here's my point, though. My point is I have to go with the conclusion that these UFOs are somewhat shy. Otherwise, they would just come and announce themselves.
I don't know why they would want to come down into the snake pit.
I wouldn't say they're shy because they're reported every day.
Well, okay, now, here's what I want to tie in, though. I want to tie in this my conclusion of shyness with the idea that you're saying that the government has one of these UFOs in their possession. Now, you would think, if my conclusion is correct that they're shy, why would they allow a government to have one of their craft in their possession when they have so much power they could just take it back? And not only that, why would they allow their beings who are dead? You'd think that being so intelligent, they would be more civilized than we are and would think about burying the dead more than we do. Why would they just, you know, say, well, all right, you know, let them do what they will with these dead brothers of ours and, you know, the spacecraft? It seems like an inconsistency there between what I think is their shyness in general with them allowing the spacecraft and their dead brethren to just, you know, all right, let them have them.
Well, they're not shy with the military. Did you hear me say that there's an ongoing contact since 1970? They are dealing with our military and are freely moving in and out of our airspace with our military sanction.
Well, are they also dealing with the Russian military?
I can't tell you that. I don't know.
Well, now, let me ask you this, then. Why would they be dealing with the military as opposed to everybody else?
Well, from the information that we have, there's an exchange of technology going on. We're exchanging something for technology.
What could we be exchanging for their technology?
You got to remember, they're a long way from home.
That's right.
And they may need some things on this planet for their own survival.
What could they need that they couldn't get with all this technological power they have?
Okay, hold on. There again, I can only give you what I hear from my sources. And that is, they're here to take water.
Well, why can't they just go in the reservoir in the middle of the night and take the water?
Well, they do.
So why do they have to make this agreement with the military to give them up all these technological secrets of theirs for some water to drink?
Well, you got to remember in the early years when UFOs showed up, the first thing that occurred was jet aircraft were scrambled after them, they were fired upon, and some incidences they were knocked down.
Well, what does that have to do with today? If they're friendly today, they wouldn't have the same fears. I mean, with their intelligence, they would be intelligent enough to leave back the past and go with the present circumstances.
Well,
they
really
wouldn't allow the past to haunt them forever.
Some type of deal was made where they freely can take water now, and also there's another phenomena that cropped up, which is the cattle mutilations that are occurring out in the West and have been since the late 60s now, which is part of the phenomena where they're freely mutilating cattle on the ranges, if you will, and are not bothered whatsoever when they're doing this.
Well, who would bother them, even if there wasn't an agreement with the military, what I'm saying? With
you
this
don't
kind
seem
of
to
power
understand.
They have, should
that
they?
We have had the ability to shoot them down, and have done that in the past. And why do you want to come down and whenever you can make an agreement not to be shot down, and all you have to is some water and food?
We have shot down UFOs.
Yes, we have shot down UFOs. UFOs have been knocked down in situations where aircraft were scrambled after, and we did fire upon them and knock them down.
Well, what's your evidence on that?
Evidence is documentation that I have from the government.
Okay, now you actually have documentation which says conclusively that this, and it describes the UFO, and it says where it's stored and everything else?
Yes.
Well, now, I would think that the New York Times would be very interested in that kind of hard evidence. Now, well, why don't you go to the New York Times and present them with this kind of hard evidence as opposed to hearsay evidence?
They have his book.
Astronauts and other things like that.
We told you that in the beginning. We had went to the papers with the documentation.
Well, I don't think that if
they're
you go to the New York Times with hard documentation like you say you have, which describes what the government themselves in a secret document describes this phenomenon, I don't think the New York Times would turn down something like that.
Well, whether you think it or not, they did.
Well, okay, then. There's nothing more I got to say about it, then, because
okay.
All I can do is take your word for it over the airwaves, and I have no way of proving it one way or the other, so
okay.
That's enough for me.
I'm not telling you to take my word. Get involved. You dig. You're a citizen. You have access to freedom of information. You dig.
Well, okay, right. Larry.
We're trying, George.
Okay, then. Keep
right.
trying.
Thank
okay,
you
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye.
It is a hard thing for a lot of people to understand how major media, or very few major media, will pay much attention to this story. However, I would point out the KABC does, and we have a larger circulation than the Los Angeles Times, so we can call that major media.
Well, it's interesting, Bill, as we said before, here we had a book that we put out to get the word out to the public, which took off like wildfire. Since July, it's in its fifth printing. Most of the papers on the East Coast have done excellent reviews on it. We haven't seen one bad review. We did send the book to the Los Angeles Times, and they refused to do a review on the book.
Well, you have to understand the Times. That's typical. Okay. I think we have Steve on the line. Steve, what's on your mind?
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Larry, nice to speak with you.
Same here, sir.
Good. I wanted to share with you an experience that both my wife and myself observed. And basically, I'm going to tell that to you and then leave you with two questions that I would like to perhaps have answered.
Okay.
The first question is, where do people either write to or talk to when they see such an observance in an urban area? And secondly, is there any possibility that what one may see could have something to do with government surveillance of some sort? And basically, what my wife and I observed in May of 84 in the Los Angeles area was we were in a weekday night. We were looking out towards the western sky, and she happened to be studying at that point in time. And she saw something hovering and had been observing it for about 5 minutes. And she called me into the other room, and I looked, and I saw what we both agreed was a triangular-shaped object in the low western sky going towards, the Malibu Beach area. And we observed it, and I was so intrigued that I went to get my film camera to take some pictures, of which I did. And we observed this object, which, amazingly, and this is also another question, is this sort of a predominant sort of sighting phenomena of seeing something that would have sort of an arcing effect? If you're looking at, say, an object, and this was triangular-shaped, it almost was as if you were looking at, say, a diamond or a crystal in the sky with some sort of reflections arcing off of it. And we watched this for a good 10 or 15 minutes, saw it then go towards the northeast sky across, say, from the Malibu area, and those listeners from Los Angeles can understand going from, say, the west Malibu area over northeast, over the San Fernando Valley, perhaps towards maybe the desert area, the high desert area. And by the time we tracked it over the desert area, over going that northeast pattern, it had shot across the sky very quickly. And at that point, we were amazed, and I have said, well, let's call up some of the local television stations or universities and see if anyone else had seen what we had seen. And at that point, we called UCLA at the astronomy department and got no reply. And we even called KABC, the television arm of your network, with the weather department there and had no response. And we even went as far as calling JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which I would imagine with these people having the knowledge that they do with science and with space, they would have some knowledge, and all we were able to contact was the night janitor, who had no reply to us. So my question is, aside from what we saw, we were two individuals who were, for the most part, skeptics. I mean, I wouldn't believe you could see anything, and we both saw something, and at that point, we wanted some verification, and we live in a large urban area. We're not able to find any verification. So my question is, how do you verify something, or who else can you share information with? Then the other question that perhaps answered this was after a few months after this was we were under the impression from some people who we had talked with who were involved with the Olympics, with the preparation, that there was quite a bit of intelligence or surveillance going on in the Southern California area with high-speed, perhaps, helicopters of some sort that have to do with the security features. So those are my two questions. I'd like to hear what both Larry and Bill have to say is, one, in an urban area, who can you contact? And two, is there a possibility that what we're seeing is just maybe our own government doing some sort of surveillance?
You said you took some photographs?
Yes, I did take some photographs.
How did they come out?
Unfortunately, they did not come out. I can only assume that the distance that I was shooting the photographs, this object that we saw, must have been a good 5 to 10 miles away, and with the shutter speed holding it, you know, the way you could, the light element just didn't come out on the film.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, there's no perhaps hard evidence, you know, of saying, here's my photograph, but there was something we definitely saw, and then, amazingly, once you see something and you're so amazed, you call the authorities, or so, you know, the media, scientific agencies, and one even agency said, what have you been smoking?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, people kind of laugh things off.
Well, Steve, next time it happens here in the Los Angeles area, call me.
I certainly will, and I'll be glad to do that.
And as far as there are other numbers to call, I think you called Jay Hynek's organization
Bill?
There in Phoenix.
Hello, Bill?
Yeah.
Yes, if your listeners would like to know of a place where they can call in their UFO reports with dignity, they can get a hold of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is the head of the Center for UFO Studies, by writing P.O. Box 44990, Phoenix, Arizona. The zip code is 85064.
Well, that's good to know. Was there ever any information with regards to when we had the Olympics, going back, Larry, to any reports back in the summer of 84 of anything that perhaps may have occurred in the Los Angeles area?
No, I didn't hear of any, and I'm sure Alan didn't, because I would have heard.
And I didn't.
I didn't see any in the media and so forth, and from your excitement and what you're seeing, I feel definite that it's something out of the ordinary. I'm sure you've seen aircraft before in the air, and you're sure it wasn't an aircraft.
Well, my first intuition was that perhaps this was some helicopter of some sort, but the way it was able to hover and the lights that arced, that was the intriguing part of it, the way there was this arcing effect, and it would almost, at one point, because we observed this thing for a good 15 minutes, and it would kind of disappear, but if you kept your eyes trained, it would reappear, and then when it finally vaulted or shot across the northeast sky through the, you know, Los Angeles Basin area, I mean, it moved at such a speed and velocity that it would have eliminated a decent observation that that is, say, a helicopter or an airplane or even a jet of some sort.
Or an ultralight.
Exactly.
So you know you saw something very unusual in the sky.
I certainly did, or we did, too.
Well, I would always...
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make, Bill. You know, people see aircraft lights every night, and they pay no attention to it. But yet when they see something very unusual, it catches their eye, and they say, my God, their mind starts wrestling. That's not an aircraft. That's something out of the ordinary. And what this man is describing is something that's out of the ordinary. It doesn't fit the realm of rationale that it is an aircraft.
So the easiest thing would be to call me or reach J. Allen Hynek's group in Phoenix, Arizona.
I see. Bill, I could reach you right through the station there.
Sure. I'm here all the time.
Good. Good to know.
Okay.
All right. Been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Good night.
And we have David.
Yeah, Bill. This is Dave. And
David, you know what I want you... Can I get you to hold for just a second?
Okay.
I'm getting behind in business here, and we've got to take care of some of this.
Yeah, I've been sitting here spellbound listening to these incredible reports that Larry's been reciting, and unfortunately what I have is nothing anywhere near that dramatic. But I wonder if either he or you has seen the article in the paper today. This was in the Daily Breeze. It says, geologists mystified over slab of displaced earth. Now, this was a chunk of earth weighing many tons. It was plucked out of a wheat field in Grand Coulee, Washington, as though someone had used a giant cookie cutter and put down right side up 73 feet away. It was held together only by the roots. And they said that the shape and thickness of the piece exactly matched the hole that was left behind, just like a piece of a jigsaw puzzle, although it was rotated about 20 degrees. And it wasn't moved in a straight line. They found dribbling dirt marks that showed that it was moved in an arc.
I haven't seen the Daily Breeze today, so I missed the story.
Yeah, anyway, it was about 2 feet thick at the thickest part and 18 inches thick at the thinnest part. Doesn't say whether it was oval or what shape it was.
Hmm.
But anyway, it said the hole was not a crater. It had vertical walls and a fairly flat bottom. It was almost as though it had been cut out with a giant cookie cutter. He said, but the roots were not cut. They were just dangling.
Interesting.
Now, I remember reading an incident similar to this many years ago. I believe it happened in France, where they had a hole that was left after a UFO landed, and it was the same sort of situation where the roots, very delicate root patterns, were left dangling.
Well,
I
don't know whether we can connect that to a UFO or not.
Yeah.
I'd like for you to send me a copy of that. I don't have degrees.
Yeah.
Would you do that, David?
Okay. I'm sure it does relate to it, because there's absolutely no way that could have happened mechanically.
We'll try to trace that down. There's our orchestra, which means we're going to take a break right now, David. Thank you for sharing that with us. Larry, stay on another hour. We'll break for news. Have another cup of coffee. We'll be right with you. I'm Bill Jenkins. This. Because now they say that they are a part of, they present a national security problem, and therefore they can't give us any specific information because of it, which is an odd thing for something that doesn't exist. And all of that is from the government, and we have to tip our hat and thanks to Larry Fawcett and his group, who have been working diligently, often going to the Supreme Court, to get this information from the government about the UFO. And he's put so much of it in his book called Clear Intent. And Clear Intent is a book that you should have, and I hope that you get it soon. It will be a definite eye-opener for you. And we're not talking about just hypothesis here or supposition. We're talking about government documents, documents that you can go get. You'll get the document number, everything with it. Find out for yourself. Larry, that's really what we're after, is involvement of the American people to have the government come clean, isn't it?
That's correct. If we can get a movement going across the country, we can get the UFO out into the open and finally come to a solution to the problem, if you will.
We're not really going, you know, trying to get the government to cough up some really valid national secrets.
No, that's correct. I'm not interested in secrets that our government has involving craft that they're designing or is duplicated of the UFO, if you will, or secrets that should remain secrets. We're just after the UFO, and that's it.
The fact that it does exist, that
that's
it has been here.
That's correct.
And we need to start adjusting ourselves to that psychologically.
That's correct. And also, another reason that we're doing this, we're tired of the government maligning people that do report UFO events. And through the years, I've seen very reputable people, after reporting UFO events, lose their jobs due to the ridicule that was created by the government in and around the sighting.
However, Jimmy Carter got a good job after he reported his UFO incident.
Correct. Very good. Listen, Bill, before we go any further, I'd like to do that little commercial again, if it's okay with you.
It certainly is.
I know you were saying in the beginning of the program the book is hard to find, and I would suggest to your listeners to try your bookstores first, and if you can't find the book, you can obtain it by writing Unicorn Limited at P.O. Box 651, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. The book sells for $8.95 for soft cover, plus $1.50 postage and handling, or $17.95 for hard cover, plus $1.50 postage and handling. All books will be autographed by me, and we'll get them to you as quick as we can. The other thing I wanted to say, Bill, was on December 10th, which is a Monday night, for 3 hours, I will be in the Masonic Temple in Los Angeles, which is open free to the public. The hall only holds, from what I understand, about 300 people. And if you want to attend, you have to call for reservations. And you can do that by dialing 436-8784. That's 436-8784. Okay, Bill, I'm ready to go with more.
Well, I want you to give that address again and give it slowly.
Okay.
So now that everybody has their pencil ready.
Okay, this is for the book. And you can obtain the book by writing Unicorn Limited, P.O. Box 651, Coventry, Connecticut, 06238. That's $8.95 plus $1.50 for postage for soft cover, and $17.95 plus $1.50 postage and handling for hardcover. All books will be autographed. That's to obtain the book. The other thing is December 10th, which is a Monday night. For 3 hours, I'll be in the Masonic Temple in L.A. You have to call for reservations. It's free to the public. The telephone number is 436-8784. And it'll be a night that you'll never forget. We're going to be talking about the Bentwater incident and some other things, and I will be playing the newly released tape recording that I have from Bentwaters on the incident.
I'm going to try to get down there myself, Larry.
I'm looking forward to seeing you, Bill. And the last...